The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We actually changed the podcast.
Hi everyone. Boom. That's TBI episode 188. Penultimate episode. It's not. Welcome to the podcast, Gilly Apter.
That's me.
You might need to move that slightly closer and
Is
go up on that
volume. We always at all times look at ourselves on that monitor.
Yeah, everyone's got to stare at themselves. Julian will be doing that a lot with his arms. So welcome to the podcast. How long have you been in London?
Almost a month.
Okay.
I mean, I come and go.
Yeah.
But
when did I see you in London? That was
saw me last year, sometime in the last August, September.
We did that Embankment gig.
Yes.
The boat?
No.
No.
Dave Ward's one.
Oh, not a civil service.
Civil
club.
Service club.
Wow.
Yes.
I haven't done a gig in years. That's a fun little gig.
That's a nice weird, little gig, isn't it?
Weird little bunch, isn't it? It feels like sort of a mini corporate. It works together.
That's exactly how it
like
felt,
that.
Like a corporate.
It's nice, though. But,
like a corporate on a very small boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's but nice enough. So you have been coming to London for how long now, on and off?
Only since 2021.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because obviously people might have picked up on the accent, South African.
Scottish.
Yes. What part of South Africa are you from?
The Scottish part.
Yeah. Scottish.
No,
part.
Not at all. I'm from Johannesburg.
Nice.
Born and raised.
The one place I've been to in South Africa.
Yeah. And how did you find it?
Well, I had quite a weird, I don't think I got a full experience of it. I got flown down to host a vegan festival in, do you know the company Fry's? It's a South African brand. It's a global vegan brand. They've got some great stuff. They were like, I'd say
Fry's as in IES.
No, Fry's as in Y apostrophe S. Yes. And basically,
that wasn't important.
Yes, thank you.
I'm glad we cleared
you
it up.
Cleared that up.
My ADHD is flaring up.
Yeah, but basically, like, you know, now veganism is massive, and every supermarket's got a freezer with 50 different brands.
Mm.
Before the sort of big new wave veganism, the old school was like Linda McCartney.
It's just you. It's just Fry's, you and Linda.
Yeah, but then Fry's actually were one of the real originators of what I would say the new wave of vegan
food.
They're
South African.
And they're a South African company.
Oh, okay.
Matt and basically they had their AGM in Johannesburg, and I went down to host the AGM.
Oh, wow, okay.
Cause I'm, you know, because I'm actually quite a prominent vegan, everybody.
Wow.
What's the AGM stand for?
And annual general meeting.
Oh.
And I did
Makes
a set
sense.
And I did some other bits and bobs. But I went on a little vegan safari.
Are you a vegan then?
Yeah.
You
on
don't
the
eat
day,
meat or dairy or anything. What about fish?
Where do you get your iron?
Where
do you get your protein, man?
I don't need any. I'm just very weak. But and then at the gig, I met a comedian called Farhan Esat.
Farhan.
Yes, sorry. And yes. We got chatting.
Butcher his name.
But he was lovely. We had a real chat. He basically said to me, "What are you doing this evening?" And I was like, "Nothing, mate. I was just going back to my accommodation."
Yeah.
And he said, "Do you want to come and do a gig?" Because I'll take you to a proper gig. And it was cool, but it was like, I remember the taxi driver wasn't taking me to do it.
Then.
It was in town.
Was it on a Sunday night or a Tuesday night?
I would say it was more likely to be a Tuesday than a Sunday.
Then you went to Kitchener's.
Maybe.
Yes.
But, why? What's the matter with the area? Is it dodgy?
You know what? All of Johannesburg is dodgy.
Is it?
And then you just have to know the levels of dodginess.
Yeah. I mean, this one, the taxi driver, when I said, "Can you take me here?" He went, "Are you sure you want to go there?"
But he said that to you.
Yeah.
Because
I was coming from a vegan festival.
He saw a white vegan that question. But it's not like...
The irony is I'm very violent. So incredibly violent.
Very racist.
It doesn't matter how violent you are. We don't want violence done to you. You know?
No, but yeah, he was. Yeah. At the time, there was that weird Uber taxi war.
Would you say
it was right in the heart of that where taxis were getting burnt out? That's why.
That's why he didn't want to go.
He didn't want to go to that area.
Scared for you, actually,
I think there'd been an Uber burnt out the week before in that area.
So
I got there and it was. I loved it because it was the most like. You know, it was the most.
Was it like in an old bar?
It was like it was very small theatery club, and there was a little back alley bit. We were hanging out outside.
You went to Kitchener's.
But it was great because you know I've travelled a lot doing comedy, but you know normally it's been sort of some of Europe, Australia, America. I've always felt like you know I'm still. Sort of the cultural norm,
right?
But I was like proper fish out of water. You know, that's the act before me was literally a guy who was talking about living in a shanty town, and I was like, it was much more interesting than normally gigging overseas, like going to America. Or
and
Australia.
How'd you do?
I think I did all right considering it was like, I was very much. I did joke at the start that just saying, "Oh, guys, you know, that guy is talking about shanty town." Today I was hosting a corporate vegan event in town. So, you know, it's a different world.
Why is it dangerous there? Would you say it's more dangerous in those areas as a white person?
No, it's dangerous for everyone.
Is it?
Yeah. We just have a lot of crime. And
I love a dangerous area, though. That fascinates me. Well, I'd like to walk
just
through
come
there.
To Johannesburg. Yeah. I mean, all
well,
of
you could just get robbed
area.
At knife point at any time.
Is Johannesburg the sort of out of all the major cities still the one with the biggest crime problem?
No, I mean I would say it's crime is everywhere.
Right?
There's one city safer than another.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, South Africa? Yeah.
People think Cape Town is.
That's what I would just have assumed Cape Town. From...
No, it's just better looking.
Right. Okay.
So have you been robbed over there?
Yes, I have actually.
Well, a few times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What, gunpoint, knife point?
Recently, nothing point, which I realised.
it
makes me really question why I gave my phone away. Technically, just gave my phone
to a little old lady.
Unfortunate, yes. It was a shakedown, you know, she had me.
But you don't know if they're going to have a knife, I suppose.
No, and it's like the way that I was robbed was, I wasn't... What happens in Johannesburg is if you stand on the street waiting for your Uber with your phone out, somebody will come and grab it and then get into a car.
That does happen
in
London, to be fair.
I've heard, except here they get on
bike. I've got a couple of phones like that.
Yes,
when I need to upgrade.
Except in London, they get on bicycles, which is your cost of living problem. That
also, I will say, London, London's not as dangerous a city as people.
It's very knifey now, though, isn't it?
It's knifey, but most of that knife crime is into gang related.
Yeah,
not. Yeah, muggings peaked in the UK, especially London, in the early 2000s when there was the first boom of mobile phones.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
the
robbers didn't have mobile phones, but now chances are a mugger's got a better phone than you.
so they ain't
going to rob your phone anymore. Like, so it's
Although they might want to sell it, and
no one carries cash anymore.
Yeah.
So it's muggings in London are really, really low nowadays. It's not a dangerous city.
The gangs are stabbing each other, though, aren't they?
Gangs are stabbing each other.
Post-code wars.
So as long as you don't join a gang,
we're going to stab other podcasts. Costs.
Shall we do that?
Yeah.
Knife
again.
Up the free speech.
I think growing up in Joburg makes you fit for a London
Jack
gang.
Skipper. So, where Jack at? Where you at, Jack?
Currently trying to start some beef with fellow podcasts.
Well done. Sorry,
say that again.
I'm saying I think being growing up in Joburg has trained me. I think I could join a London gang.
Yeah.
I think I got what it takes.
Should do. I reckon. While you're here, you might as well, you know, immerse yourself in our culture.
The first initiation would be like steal somebody's phone.
Yeah, I could
just do that. I could do that so easily.
Quite prevalent over there.
Yes, but the thing about guns is they use them in house kill. Robberies and hijackings and all kinds of things. They've realized that what they can do is they can just run up to you, grab your phone, and run very fast and get into a car.
That's the best way. So these guys
will come around. They'll, as you know, you're talking about
tourists mainly.
No, they'll target anybody. Tourists are a little bit more ignorant, but everybody has an ignorant point in their day where they're not paying attention and their phone is in their hand.
Yeah.
I had my phone like tight close to my body like this. Yeah. So it's like, it's... Yeah, what they do is basically they'll go out, they'll collect 10 phones and sell them for so cheap. They'll sell them for, you know, like a couple of $100.
Yeah.
That's quite good. If you ever bought one off of them.
No.
Oh.
No.
Should do.
And come and sell them.
Bring them to the UK.
That happens quite a lot. The bike theft is massive in London.
I had my bike nicked. I had my wheels nicked off my bike once. I went to get on it. I thought, the seat's low down. I still cycled to work.
Because I've heard stories of people getting their bike nicked, then going on Gumtree the next day and their bike's on there and they've gone back. They've gone, I'd like to buy the bike. Give my fucking bike back. Basically rob your bike back off the person selling it on Gumtree.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
It's like everything used to be like this. It's just now online. My mother told me the story once where her bicycle was stolen when she was a child and her dad went and stole somebody else's bicycle and gave it to her.
Yeah. I remember when I once went on holiday with my friends to Tenerife when we were 18 and... We sort of befriended, like, you were in like a massive hotel, we're all in like little apartments, and there were some right dodgy sorts in the hotel. And there's a couple of girls who we sort of got to know, and they were hanging out in our room a bit. Then one of the nights, I remember my mate just couldn't find his wallet, and I knew it. I was like, one of them scamps, mate. So I basically then, we hadn't seen him for a couple of days, or for a day either as well.
I think they basically
befriended us, robbed his wallet because he saw it, and then they sort of went off to find the next victim.
You robbed her sexual health. When women do crime.
I went and robbed it, but I basically robbed it back. I just went that night, we'd been out drinking, I sort of had that booze confidence.
With a machete.
I just went and knocked on their room, and I just went, are you all right? And I went in for a drink, and I was in there, like, and there was all these dogs. Geezers around. So I just sort of chatting to everyone and all that. And while I was there, I was just looking around.
Shot a machine gun in the air.
And I went up, I found my mate's wallet. And then
did you take the cash out?
Dropped it back to him. Yeah, man, they took the cash.
Yeah, they must have took that one.
Yeah, basically, like, robbed his wallet back and then just sort of hung around for about 20 minutes and then got out of there. Yeah.
That's kind.
I was very proud of myself, actually.
Yeah. I got robbed in Lewisham once, street robbery, but we walked around the corner. We went and got it back. We went and got our stuff back. We just grew some balls thought we can't have that and went back there.
And you have South African taxi drivers asking you if you'll be safe. Look at you, criminals.
We'll be all right. But how do you find comedy here then?
Comedy in London, in my opinion, I think it's the best place to do comedy in the world.
I think we're in a boom time in London as well. I think the last 3 or 4 years, or even like probably just a couple of years before COVID, and then now it's back up and running.
Yeah.
But like the gigs gigs are packed, gigs are on fire, man. Audience.
It's true, man, isn't it?
Hang on, I've just lost connection here. What is that?
We can hear you. So why do you think London's good? Because of the amount of gigs?
No, I mean, that's a separate thing, the actual gigging itself, but performing in London to London audiences for me has been the best audiences in the world, in my opinion.
You're very funny.
Thank you. But the thing is, there's so many good comedians in London.
Thank you.
And
there's a lot.
You're welcome.
That is we've got so many clubs and so many nights. I do think it's ripe sort of ground to grow them.
I've been trying to figure out what it is, because in South Africa, our audiences are not as responsive, regardless of...
They're all scared of getting their phones nicked.
Yeah, they're a little bit on edge.
But is that because...
How are they going to get home?
We've got, obviously, like, in terms of how long stand-up is a culture here, we've had it since, you know, even like, obviously we had alternative comedy in the 80s came along, but before that we had... you know, sort of working men's clubs comedy for
Bernard
and
Manning.
Then before that we had bloody you know, vaudeville, right? So we've had it for 100 years.
Absolutely.
Charlie Chaplin.
It's in our bones.
I think the majority is that. I always say, like, it's just people, Londoners have just been sitting in dark rooms watching people on stages since whenever. And so I can tell you, South Africans, when you're doing comedy to South Africans, the way I've described it recently is like, imagine you're a magician doing magic, but you're also having to explain the concept of magic
as you go.
Yeah.
You know, you can feel that people here, if you're good, people know what a punchline is. They know when to laugh. It's like they understand their role.
They know what they're,
And I feel like they understand that here better than anyone else.
Where have you, what sort of clubs are you, where are you playing? What's the main places?
Where have I played? Top Secret, that's a great Backyard.
Yeah, great.
Love that. Good, two great clubs.
I played.
What was that show? You were doing your own show, touring.
Yes, I'm doing that now every week. Actually,
Where do you do that?
At Trapeze in Shoreditch.
Okay.
Every Sunday night, I do a show called Story Party. I host it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a dating themed stand up show with a little bit of like audience storytelling in the second half. I've toured with that show for the last couple of years.
What were you doing in Australia then? What
was that?
Oh, really?
That show,
oh, cool. Where did you go?
Oh, we went everywhere. Yeah. You know, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, some funny little.
Is that your first time there?
Yeah.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the theme of the show then? You hook people up?
No.
No.
Because the problem with the show.
Oh, I won't come then. Not really.
No, you should. I'll tell you why.
Go on.
Because the thing about the show.
I'm celibate,
is that,
by the way. I was just joking.
The thing about the show.
Celibate. I mean, celibate.
Don't
you ain't a priest, mate.
Please don't come and have sex with all the women at the show.
Oh, why not?
Okay. But,
I mean, that is, you can't promise that.
No position to make
bring
that
promise. Bring my machete, not really.
The show is a dating themed show, but what happens is, for some reason, the show attracts so many more women than men.
Yeah.
So I always say, if you come to the show, you're as a like single heterosexual male, you're kind of a genius.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. That's a good tip for listeners, Lucas. I know you're seeing someone now, aren't you? How's that going?
Seeing someone. It's good. Thank you.
Still
going all right?
Still
yeah?
ticking along nicely. Yeah.
I'll bring. We'll both come and we'll try and find a third though.
A third. That's, you are that age group. You fucking polyamorous weirdos.
Get down the love garden.
Or if you find that it's not going very well with her, you can just throw her in and take another one. Would
you ever consider polyamory, Lucas?
Oh,
is your generation seems to be all over that shit.
I mean, it
makes me sick.
All this love makes me sick.
Just, I don't buy it. I don't believe it.
It's not the 60s, mate.
Yeah, they're very. It's almost a reversal.
I mean, it's like, you know, no man, I don't think, would ever say no to two dating two women.
I absolutely disagree.
Really?
Man.
A lot of admin.
There's so much admin. Just one happy relationship is absolutely ample.
It is the best way, one monogamous relationship.
I had a friend who's in a polyamorous relationship, and she told me that it's not like it's three relationships. There's about, 27 relationships going on. Your relationship to this person, your relationship to this person, your relationship to them as a pair. This person, it's firing in all different directions.
And also, the dynamic's going to be different based on the makeup of the relationship. If it's a heterosexual guy with two bisexual women,
sweet things,
then that's different to if it's a heterosexual guy with two relationships with heterosexual women. Like, there's so many different variables that I think it's just chaos. Yeah, I can't imagine anything worse.
The thing that people say makes you about happy. Polyamorous people in like
they've
the modern age.
They've got AIDS.
No, they don't.
God.
they're all... Sorry, I just can't get over that.
We'll cut that out. Mm-hmm.
They're all really ugly. Like, they... That's worse than what I said.
We'll cut out the answer, but they're all butters, man.
No, that's true, though. It's true. Like, if you see polyamorous people, they're all really ugly.
Well, I mean,
it's like the reason
but the ones we see on, like,
no
documentaries.
No one has settled down.
But that's often, like, yeah. Like, when
wait,
you
I want to
like,
hear what? What do you think is behind this?
Well, the reason everyone says it is because
who's
they
everyone? You.
They can't date. No, not me.
All
not
the
me.
Voices in my head say it.
They can't date an eight, so instead they date two fours.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll say that.
Okay.
It's always dangerous to bring in maths.
I know. It's an easy way to umbrella term, but I think it's kind of true.
I'm going
to
look after
it. It's certainly a theory, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how. I don't think it. I don't. I don't think it fully.
Like, I just go for straight tens.
I've known some people that have been in open relationships. Obviously, that's just where you know, you're together, you might even live together, but you're allowed to have the odd one night.
Some people want to hear about it. It's like a kink, isn't it? Like a cuckold. Like they want to hear about it. And some don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I had a guy.
Does Hannah tell you about Lucas? Not really.
I had a guy who was in a relationship and their relationship was open.
Yeah.
And I was the first person that he was like wanting to be with, right?
Nice.
And I was like, sure, no problem. I've got no problem with this.
What? So you went into their relationship?
I didn't go into their relationship. No,
just with him.
He was allowed. And she knew about it.
Yes.
Ah. Did she know you as the person?
But he was so, we went out one night and then he went home and he was like, I don't know if I can see you again. I'm having issues. There was so much back and forth admin.
It's never smooth sailing.
I didn't want to be like, work this stuff out first and then come.
Either tap it or don't, bruv, but don't get me mixed up in your dramas.
Yeah. 100%.
And again, it's that thing
I thought this was supposed to be easy for me.
Yes,
at the very least.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. And also, always, it depends as well who, like, you've got to put so many rules in place, I think. You know, when two people decide to have an open relationship, like, obviously you've got to say, right, it can't be anyone we know.
Can't be anyone with a bigger dick. That whittles it down to just children then. Baby men.
I know someone it happened to. I know someone that they entered into they were in a relationship for a while and things were a little bit, you know, they were getting on, but I think they just thought, they both had quite unique careers where they travel a lot, and they thought it would make things easier if they were allowed to have the odds.
It's not that they were having more sex with people; they just stopped lying.
Basically, that was it.
But then, the rules were no one we know and all that, and they did all the classic rules. But then, she slept with the manager of their local pub. And
what a tart.
So then suddenly he was like, but that's sort of, you know, even though we don't know him, it's not friends. Now I can't go to my local pub anymore. Because I see that guy.
Maybe he shouldn't have had that arrangement if he's going to get those feelings up.
But I think, again, he didn't think he'd have those feelings.
Even if there's a rule of someone I don't know, it means that he's bothered. You know what I mean? Either you're bothered or you're not, I think.
No, I think you... I think
it's okay to have rules. I mean, we're all making the stuff up, so why not make up the thing that you want to do?
But
I also think... You think they broke up because of that thing. Maybe they would have broken up anyway.
I mean, it was a crap relationship. Yeah, exactly. The fact that they started even having help with other people
great. They the beginning of the end.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think it's I don't know. I'm a bit old school in my views on all. So I think it's all a little bit of a.
Is Hannah still pushing for that? Yeah. She wanted it in the vowels.
But yes. Anyway, so you travelled around Australia. Talk us. What did you think of Australia as a first timer?
Shit hole.
I had no intention of going to Australia, really.
Melbourne.
Actually, you told me that.
Yeah.
Tells everyone that. Every conversation he's ever had has includes that information.
Very strange fact to include. I, you know what? I had no intention of going to Australia at all. In fact, a few weeks before I got booked to go do this tour, I said to my friend, I was like, you know, one place I feel like I never have to go is Australia.
Right.
And then 2 weeks later, they were like, do you want to go to Australia? Do you want to go every single place in Australia? And that's what I did. Every single place.
And were you traveling alone or you had a team?
I was traveling with my friend Tats, who you have met.
Yeah, he's a brilliant comedian.
I got to basically pick somebody to come with me because the show is, I host
the
show.
Was he opening or something?
No, he...
carrying your bags.
Sort of, yes. No, there's different ways to do the show because it's started by a guy who does it his own way. He doesn't care how I do it. So... as long as, we do the storytelling part at some point in the second half or whatever. So I would, now I sort of do the show, I host for an hour. I do a full 45 minutes, basically, up front. Yeah. We do a break, and then in the second half, I bring a guest on. But when we were touring this show, the way we did it was, I would come up, do half an hour, he would do half an hour, and then we'd do a break, and then bring, audience, audience storytelling and stuff like that. So, and sometimes he would come on stage in the second half to, read people's stories out with me.
Nice.
When you say
audience storytelling, so the audience brings stories.
No, what they do is they, in the break, they write dating stories, like anonymous gamble cards. Ah,
okay.
I read them. It's got to be fun. It is fun. It is fun.
Does it tend to lean towards bad date stories?
Yes.
Is what we're at. Well, yes. That's what we're
good
at.
Good ones are boring.
Yeah, that's what I really sat on and then we had it off.
That's what I vet. So I read the stories while another actor's on stage. You want the worst ones. And what I do is I'm always vetting them. And then the thing I vet for very quickly is honestly only two things. Like whether or not it's boring. If it's boring, or racism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No racism, no boring stories. It might be funny unless, if it was a bad date because he was racist.
So then I do read them. I don't protect like the racist in the story.
Yeah.
I just don't want to read a story that's going to make somebody feel crappy in the audience. That's what I don't read. It's rare, but it does happen.
Does any spring to mind as like the worst sort of dates you've ever heard about? Like, is there any? Have you got any like?
You know what? I'll tell you what. Last week, and sometimes one or two people come up and tell their stories. I always say, like, if you want to come and tell the story, write your name at the bottom of the story, and then somebody will come up and tell. And for me, that's a big gamble. I don't know if the story is going to be good, if the storyteller is going to be shit. Sometimes women just want to come up and complain. Like, they just want to bitch about whatever just happened. An Irish woman came up last week and told the story of how she went on a date with this guy. And it was all going very. She had a great time with him. They were bantering all the time. They saw each other again. It was like going really, really well with this experience. And then he just stopped replying to her text one day, right? And she was like, "This bastard, he's ghosted me. This motherfucker." Like, she's telling all her friends. She's like running him down. And then he comes like a couple of weeks later. He sends her a text and tells her that
he died.
He had a heart attack, right?
Oh fuck!
So she's like, "Oh my god, I'm so sorry."
Nice line.
Then
soldier.
Keep that one in your locker.
I was already a little bit skeptical, but then she said, "Oh." Then she saw him again. She had a great time. Then he invited her to his for like a meal. They were going to cook a meal together. So she goes to his house, and he's not there. Doesn't answer. Doesn't reply to her text. She's standing outside with like steaks. He doesn't let her in.
Another heart attack.
Is he dead? Is he dead?
He comes back to her a few weeks later and says, "You won't believe this. I've had another heart."
Nah, this guy's a fucking king, man. This guy's an absolute legend.
Where is this? Did you get him up on stage and applaud this gent? Did she buy it, King?
No.
You can't afford it.
Second time around, she didn't buy it, thankfully.
Fuck.
Fucking hell.
The audacity is just beautiful.
I love it.
That's like a bit sociopathic, isn't it? Yeah. There's no empathy. They just lie, look you in the face.
With nothing.
It's so bold.
It's so bold.
He could have gone such smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to go straight to heart attack.
Or just be there or cancel the day.
That's my life. Even if you ghost, but then to come back and say you had a second heart attack. It really is I don't know. It's like a lesson in audacity.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It makes for a good story. I think it's maybe better that way. I'd rather be ghosted with a good story.
Yeah.
It's always, it's good. It's always good to bank some good lies, I think.
So did she see him again for a third time? No, that was it.
I think what I would have done at that stage is just gone and driven a...
To give him a heart
into
attack.
His heart, yes.
Double jeopardy.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Just let him have a real reason.
Did he try again then? And she was like, "No, I don't buy it."
Yes.
Did she ever try and corroborate if there was any real health issues?
All the hospitals in the area.
Yeah.
I mean, there must be a way of finding out. Is there a heart attack?
There's
database?
Medical records he could have produced.
I don't remember how the story ended, but something in the story, in the end of the story, was that the fact that we knew that it wasn't.
Oh, quality. He was just talking shit.
Unbelievable.
Have you ever had an excuse to ghost somebody?
I don't ghost.
Just go out of everyone.
I want to say no.
You can still reply without.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I don't think like I've ever been like, "I'll see you at so such and
just
such a
not
place
gone there.
Yeah.
When I was younger, as a teenager, I did meet a girl in a club and I was drunk and I arranged to meet her outside Burger King at Charing Cross.
Nice.
And she did.
You didn't follow up.
No, I did. I went there, but I didn't. I obviously was drunk when I gave her my number. Yeah.
Oh no.
But I still met. I still.
That's sad. The fact that you actually.
Look over and I was like. Yeah.
Not really.
Like story. This is like before sunrise. Landed.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of them and that. But I did walk around the West End with her, and we had a little. And then walked back, and then I went home. Just out of politeness.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, politeness goes a long way.
Then I've railed her in an alleyway. You know what I mean?
Have you ever ghosted anyone, Lucas, or been ghosted?
I've never ghosted anyone. Have I been ghosted? No, I don't think so.
Everyone's always been ghosted and no ghosts, hey?
No ghosts. I'm a catch.
Certainly. I don't think I've been ghosted.
Let me think.
I don't know. I mean, what's the definition? Them just not replying anymore.
Yeah.
I might have been ghosted if I didn't care, though, so it hasn't really been significant.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I suppose it's...
It's when you care that it's a ghosting, isn't it?
Yeah, it stinks.
Do you know what I mean?
I think that's what makes a difference.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes like a ghost.
You were
invested, and then somebody goes absolutely...
Yeah. That's a ghosting, man.
Are you single?
Yes.
Slow down, King.
No, I was going to say because obviously,
sorry about
if you're doing it. If you're doing a dating,
I'm not going to be your third. Carl.
If you're doing a dating show, obviously, I imagine it helps to be single.
You're in
the dating world.
You must have dating stories. Do you ever put them in the show?
You know what the thing is? I don't date at all.
No.
In fact, I'm trying to convince
you celibate
comes
too
to
as well
to
not
to stop dating.
So, and what's the outcome of that then? Just no one ever
Happiness.
Sees anyone else.
Again. But how do you
pure joy?
Right.
No, it's you know what it is. It's the thing about women, right? It's specifically women. Women date with this major agenda.
Right.
Long list of their requirements.
Not the long list of the requirements. More as much as how important it is. Like women feel so bothered by whether or not they are in a relationship.
Oh, yes, I see.
It really affects the way we feel about ourselves, you know, from when we're very, very young.
Yeah.
And so now that I don't feel that way anymore at all, I really would love to, like, I want to, like, start a movement, you know?
Yeah. What, just not labeling it, you mean?
I just don't feel like I'm not, like, when people ask me if I'm single, I'm like, I don't even ascribe that.
What does your husband say about that?
He's dead.
He had a heart attack.
He died this morning.
Yes.
I get what you mean. Saying you're dating suggests you're sort of like constantly on the lookout.
And I think women are too.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, so
what you're saying, men are just more.
I think men are not
on the sniff. Or
it's just
you
not
know what
so.
You know what I'm saying?
Dating
I'm
is
saying,
not
King.
So deeply tied to their like.
No.
They don't
want to
label
it. Destiny,
you're my girlfriend now. We're dating. We're caught. Whatever you want
to.
No,
almost
I think men
want to
be in relationships. I think they just it doesn't affect them on such a deep level. Like, oh my God, if I'm going to be single, I'll die.
Yeah.
It's not like tied to mortality, you know?
Is that because women can have babies? That was controversial.
Jordan Peterson.
Generally speaking.
Been watching his Andrew Tate videos again.
Please don't cry.
Yeah.
But women can have babies and they kind of, it's just instinctive.
Women have a it's not about even women can have babies. Women have a relationship to having a baby or not having
and
a baby.
And also, not to sound, it's horrible to even put it in these terms, but in terms of age does affect that. Men,
absolutely
we
true.
Can start, we can still knock out kids when we're 75.
Yes.
I don't know
about how those kids will turn out, but I'm
they're horrendous.
Turn out horrendous when we're younger as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I do. I reckon it's probably part of it is that weird, even if it's subconscious.
It
whatever.
Is. It's the subconscious thing of like that's hanging over our heads, which is like, if all this dating must lead to something.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how much that affects you. You don't even realize, because especially if you're brought up in a society and an environment that feels progressive, you don't realize that thing is still weighing on you.
Yeah.
And I only know that because I can tell you it stopped weighing on me recently and I felt so free.
How recently?
Like,
just
maybe
now?
Like in the last, like,
when you saw
when
me.
When I stepped into this booth.
Yeah.
You were looking for marriage before that.
Now you don't ever want to meet another man.
Now you hate men.
Exactly. Now I feel so liberated.
So what do you do? You're not dating like the label, but you still kind of go and have a pret-a-manger with a geezer. A little peppermint tea.
Man.
Do you still...
I would love to have a pret-a-manger with a geezer.
Do you hook up with guys?
Very rarely, but I would. I will say I would.
Yeah.
I don't have a rule against it.
Cool. Yeah,
I just don't seek out dating and
relationships. Yeah, but you get seeked out.
Sought after.
No, not particularly.
Really?
Yeah.
We had a comedian called Eleanor Conway on last week, and she talks a lot about how the difference, like, as a female comedian and a male comedian, like, that concept of hooking up with somebody from the audience, yes, after the show.
Yes.
You know, because it is, but we'd all agreed that it's more common for male comedians.
This show, Story Party, when it's hosted by a man, it's a dream for him. He's got the majority of the audience are single women between the ages of like 25 fishing. And 20. Yeah.
Pull it in the net.
It's just a numbers game.
Pop a couple of blueies.
But as a woman, it's very rare. And also, it's exceptionally rare.
Yeah.
In the few times that I have been like...
Because men might be intimidated by the confidence some men are, aren't they? Like a woman on stage.
Do you know what I think?
Men want to save women.
I don't even know
women.
That they're intimidated. I feel like... I can't tell you how many conversations I had where a man will come up to me and be like, he's like looking me in the eye and he'll say, I've always wanted to be a comedian.
Oh, God.
every man I've met since I've started comedy.
Yeah.
Who even if they're engaging with me in a flirtation.
But male
way,
comedians
it's
get
just
that
a
from
matter of time.
Audience members as well. Like,
we get it from
me
guys, but not if in that sense of like, you wouldn't
women.
Have a woman.
Yeah,
come up
not
to you
from
after.
Women.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if they said, I'd like to be a comedian, I'd be like, ugh, gross.
Get away.
I can't tell you how often I used to like
be
dating
a
guy
tonight.
And think I'm dating a guy, but actually I think he's just trying to get into comedy.
That's bad. Yeah, yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think there's a totally different dynamic in that sort of, I mean, there's a different dynamic in general between, I know things are much better than they used to be. You know, I started out and we started out at the same time. Catching the end of like, comedy from the 90s like into the like we started out around the mid 2000s and like that it was still essentially felt like the 90s comedy circuit was the thing that was driving it all. It was very masculine, like audiences were very masculine. It was like Jonglers with his big club,
good old
who
days.
Had like it was big groups and it was very combative and like
very testosterone.
There was way fewer female comedians. It was much harder for them, like they'd sort of almost had to be a certain type of female comedian to get by. Whereas now things are much better, but there's still, you can still feed it in
the room.
The
quality's dipped, is that what you're saying? Oh, I thought that, sorry.
But no, you can still feel it in certain rooms, in certain like certain nights of the week, a big weekend club in certain, I'd say mainly out of London. London, I think, is a much more egalitarian city. But, I've done gigs recently with brilliant female comedians, but you walk on and you can see...
The
groups
audience
of guys
I can tell
almost
you.
Almost check out mentally.
Absolutely,
a lot of female comics get that thing where it's I don't normally like female comedians and all that. Yeah,
I could tell you there was often I never really wanted to believe in how much that was true.
Yeah,
but there was a stage when I was touring with a South African comedian called Skulk. Skulk's very beloved local South African comic, and I was touring all over the country with him. And at first, I was like, why can't I get a good response? It was very 50-50.
Yeah, yeah,
and at that stage, I'd been doing comedy a while. Like, it wasn't like, I was...
Just get a skirt
was,
on or something.
And like, you're absolutely right. I was...
I should be your manager.
Please.
Put a bit of lippy on. Sorry, Karen.
Are you sure? and I was like... trying, he would feature me sort of somewhere in the middle of the show and not so much as an opening act, but I was still kind of an opening act for him. And what I realized is I was trying to figure out the exact, I was like, I'm sure I can solve this thing with words, with a good joke. I can like crack this crowd open, whatever it is. And then what I realized was that the feeling that I'm receiving is happening before I'm even at the mic. So that was a big lesson for me. It was a big lesson in like, there's only so much you can do.
Is that from women and men in the audience, would you
say?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you,
women even more so,
you can't,
maybe.
Like, there's no joke I can do that can undo whatever your culture and your upbringing is. Like, I can't undo that. So
I'd say, and it's definitely, I'd say a lot of it's generational. Like, if you play someone like Top Secret, where the average audience age... it's probably 25.
Yeah.
You don't really feel that.
They see a lot of women.
Because
there.
Exactly. It's exposure. Yeah. They've watched women on Netflix.
And they're just they do a cricket club up. Like,
yeah, exactly. Even like if you Sheffield. Do bigger cities, but like out of town.
Mm. Yeah.
I did gigs. I did a weekend with Helen Bauer recently. It was brilliant. And she's a real powerhouse. She comes out and just like fires into
she's
the audience.
Funny.
Like, she's so good.
Right.
But like, and she, you can just feel that she, we were talking about it over the weekend, like you can just feel there's groups of guys in the room that just ain't gonna go for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just, they're just old boys who don't really believe that, what's this, why she, first off they see a woman and they're like, what's she doing on stage?
Yeah.
And then when she's like sort of in their face and like really sort of, you know, she's not doing it how they probably expect her to.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
That sets them off again. Yes. Like, fucking, why is she so aggressive? Like,
yeah.
And yeah, they can't even compute what's happening. They look like they're malfunctioning.
No, it's exactly that. They don't know
what's
happening.
A guy had to be dragged out of the gig while she was on because he started just shouting horrific shit.
Fucking.
Like, he literally got wrestled out of the room because he was such a div.
Wow.
Fucking.
So, like, yeah, it was, you know, it's mad to sort of witness it.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's.
He sounds like my crowd.
They dragged him out and gave him a flyer for your show. Go see this guy, man. You'll like him. He had a ponytail as well, which is that's a red
legend.
He was in his 50s with a ponytail.
Oh, was it greased down?
Greasy grey ponytail. Fuck it.
Legend.
But where else have you gigged? What other countries?
New York a little bit.
How's New York?
New York's fun. Yeah. You can do a million shows. The quality is not necessarily all very high.
Yeah.
But at least people are friendly. Every comedian hosts a show and will invite
you. Late
at
night, I bet, isn't it? Like 1 a.m. spot, is it?
Yeah, you can get anything anywhere. You can do like 5 gigs a night. Like I said, the quality isn't necessarily going to be great. Sometimes you're going to be performing to 8 other comedians.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and but it's very dense. There's a lot of gigs, and they've got like all kinds of weird systems there that they don't have here. Here, the scene is very formalized.
Yeah,
you know, there.
But there, the waitress could be walking around and serving
that's
food.
One thing I didn't like about it. I've never actually gigged in New York, but before I started comedy, or just very early on when I was starting, I was on holiday in New York and I went to a comedy club, and that table service thing, I was like, what is going on? I was used to this like UK comedy club seated,
so neat and so organized. Yeah.
You know,
we
keep
low ceiling,
and just like people walking across the front of the stage when the comic was doing a bit to start to take somebody's order. I was like, this is rubbish, man. I didn't like it. Whereas LA, I've been like, I've gigged in LA, and their clubs
tend
to be.
Yeah, I did a handful of gigs
in. The ones I did were much more UK-y in terms of they were set up properly.
Right.
And
yes.
Yeah, there was no distractions.
Yes, yes, yes. I like
the
that about
silence
gigs,
of the, your audience. No punchlines to distract them.
Nothing to distract them from the horror that they were witnessing.
You think your mic's come undone, man?
I was at my mic now. Why
no, I asked Lucas to cut it.
Cut that mic.
There we go.
But yeah. And what? So where you're here till how long?
Till the end of May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything like the Edinburgh Fringe or any of those things?
No.
Would you ever consider
tempted?
It?
You know what?
It's rubbish.
I have to tell you, from everything I've heard, it actually sounds exceptionally painful.
Mm. I don't. I mean, me and Julian have very different views on it. Julian hates it.
I don't
want to
speak out of turn. I've never.
But
been
it's. I get. It is. I get why people don't like it. Mm. It's. It's a grueling. Doesn't feel like a fun
it's
month.
It's good doing
gigs.
A new hour every year, isn't it? I mean, not for me, but I understand it.
Yeah,
it's like creative. It's
But I feel like you can. The thing that I'm very passionate about right now is learning how to sell tickets.
Mm.
Just learning how to sell tickets to your own show.
Yes.
Because you can do an hour every year on your own without having to go to a festival
and
sell tickets to your own show. You know, I see acts here preparing for Edinburgh, right? And they're telling me, like, oh, I'm doing. I remember speaking to a comedian and she said, like, I'm doing 15 preview shows, right? And I wanted to say, like, you mean you're doing 15 shows? You're doing
an hour 15 times.
You know, you could be doing that anyway and you could be selling tickets to it. Guess what?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a very different culture. And I think, like, I'm just learning that for me to go somewhere to expect to be noticed and hinge everything on that. You know, if you're going to spend money on that, unless, I mean, of course, if you're represented and somebody's doing that for you, great. I feel like there's lots of different paths to take. But if I've got any amount of money, I'm going to invest it in trying to sell a show.
Yeah.
You know, and I can do that. I can spend money on marketing to bring people to my show.
Because that's obviously, because Edinburgh didn't used to be like that. Edinburgh, that's a sort
before social media, I guess, it was more.
But
it used to be, up until about the early 2000s, Edinburgh was, you would preview the show there. So you'd go there with your hour of notes.
Right.
And people would watch the show.
But now it has to
develop
be ready.
over the month.
I see.
But then, as we sort of entered into the 2000s, and we suddenly had this boom in comedy, and there was like loads of TV comedy started and it became a much more professional industry.
You had to take the finished product.
Yeah, so now people expect the show to be ready for the start of Edinburgh rather than just rolling
up. Which is great, but then you can also be doing that show anyway throughout the year. You know what I mean?
You could do it on YouTube and just...
Well, you could do it anywhere and you could do it in a small venue and you could sell tickets to it. You could do it every week and sell tickets to it. Yeah, you could have your show perfect for the festival.
One. I did the Melbourne Comedy Festival in 2021, and we were sort of still in lockdown in the UK.
Right.
But I was flying out to Melbourne, and basically I couldn't get previews here because there was no gigs.
Right.
So what I did was I did a couple of previews on Zoom, like online.
Yeah.
And just sort of...
Just to get through the material.
Yeah. And had like a little donation thing like for people that came to watch. If you liked it, donate some money. Actually, sort of, people donated like quite... I did quite well out of it. But it was... it shows you can monetize
the
preview.
I can tell you what I did in South Africa. Now, I was in South Africa for December and January, right?
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to Cape Town. I needed a break from touring. And I set up a show in a small venue, 50 people... Every Sunday night, right? Called it Funny Sundays with Gilly Apter. Every Sunday night in the same venue, right? It's a tiny little...
In London.
In South Africa, in Cape Town, right? There's a... It's got a bar. It's got everything you need for a tiny show. A stage, spotlight, good sound. You know, they do karaoke there typically. So that's kind of a good venue to find for comedy. Yeah. Anyway, I took out this venue every Sunday. I asked them, when are you closed? They're closed on a Sunday. Cool, I want that night.
Right.
And every Sunday night I did a show. And the show is my hour.
Yeah.
I would bring on one guest comedian each week. Sometimes if they were very well known, I'd have them like at the end headlining.
Yeah.
If not, I would put them 20 minutes in. But actually, I would do my hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I got to do that hour every week.
Yeah.
It's good.
And sell tickets to it.
What's the sort of landscape in South Africa? Because obviously here that we are in that Edinburgh thing where people tend to... If they're doing the festival circuit, they tend to write a new hour every year.
Yeah.
What's the sort of general...
You do a new hour every 20 years.
Okay. Julian's a South African comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm South African. Hi, everybody. That's the end of the public episode.
Thanks for listening. Now, if you would like to hear more, you can go over to patreon.com/...
We are TVI. You have to put it in the search bar.
Because we still haven't taken it off adult content.
Because it's triple X.
It's dirty. Filthy.
Nice.
Get your willies out when you listen. but yeah, go over to Patreon, sign up. What's the tiers? I can't remember what it is. Three?
We've got £3, £5, £10 and £20.
I mean, the 20 is a joke one. £10 is sort of a joke as well. £3 gets you just all the back catalogue extra episodes and
hours and hours.
I don't know how I'm 100
hours
extra sort of episodes. The £5 tier, you get all that as well. But you also, if you wish, get to join the TVI WhatsApp group. And
you can also see the full episode or listen to the full episode with a £3 tier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
£5 gets you the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excellent. That's it. That's all you need to know. Get over to Patreon if you want more.
Thanks for listening.
Otherwise, just thanks for listening to the public episode. And we'll
please like and share.
Yeah, give it a share, mate. Tell your friends. Tell your families. Tell your kids. Bye bye.
Love you.
You're actually changing the podcast.
I think you're... I think you're...
I think you're...
I think you're... I think you're...